Coming up after the news on the BBC World Service, it's Hard Talk with me, Stephen Sacker. My guest today is an
Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Your favorite hour of the day is here. It's 1 p.m. and you are locked into WKAR AM 870 105.1 FM. I am the captain of this current sports ship, Al Martin, and we've got a lot to get to on this Wednesday, as I like to say, hump day edition of Current Sports, November 7th, 2018. Really hope all of you made your way out to the polls on Tuesday, Election Day. It's the most important right that we have as Americans, and I hope you exercised it. And we've got a great hour of sports talk coming your way on this post-election day show. Of course, we'll start the hour by discussing what took place out in Indianapolis, Indiana at Bankers Life Fieldhouse as Tom Izzo's Michigan State men's basketball team were pretty competitive. At first, it looked like a few times it was going to be a blowout. You know, Kansas tried to pull away, but Michigan State showed some fight, showed some grit, and came out in that second half and made it interesting in the waning minutes. But in the end, it was number one Kansas that held on for that win. What did Coach Izzo have to say after the game? And you'll get to hear my takeaways from that matchup for the Spartans. You know, even though the Spartans lose, I consider a game like this, you know, everything you get out of a game like this going against the number one team in the nation, it's a win in that regard for me, all right? And we will be joined by a man who was able to witness the Champions Classic out in Indy. I'm not sure if he has made his way back to Atlanta, but he'll be joining us via phone. Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, host, and producer for CBS Radio in Atlanta, actually caught Deshaun's noggin a few times on ESPN last night as he took in the Spartans and Jayhawks. And then not too far after that, of course, you saw this loaded Duke Blue Devils team just make it look easy peasy against John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats. It's amazing when you look at Duke right now. I mean, they got the number one, two, and three recruits. First time that's ever happened, by the way. And, you know, again, I'm a fanboy of Zion Williamson. But the other two studs on that team who went one and two actually in the recruiting rankings before Zion, who was the number three recruit in that class, I mean, it blows my mind. I mean, we're talking about, you know, Cam Reddish and R.J. Barrett. R.J. Barrett, I think, will be the number one overall draft pick in the NBA draft next summer. I mean, you got those kind of talents along with Zion Williamson, along with Trey Jones, little brother of Tyus Jones in the NBA. It's amazing the embarrassment of riches that Coach K and the Duke Blue Devils have this season. So we'll talk to Deshaun about that as well. Also, as promised, you'll get a chance to hear from Coach Mark D'Antonio during his weekly press conference at the Tom and Loopy Izzo Media Center on Tuesday morning. As Mark D'Antonio puts in perspective this whole quarterback, quote-unquote, controversy here in East Lansing, and he actually doubles down his decision to start Brian Lewerke, much to the demise of many Michigan State football fans out there. That is what Coach D'Antonio is going to do.
this Saturday as the Spartans get ready to play host to the Ohio State Buckeyes on Fox. And then on the back end of the show, the Detroit Lions have waived Amir Abdullah. What does that mean for the team moving forward? We will answer that question and more while, of course, inviting you all to be a part of these next 60 minutes. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there and comment below that video. And you can even join the conversation on Twitter. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. You know what's next, though. Here are your quick hit headliners. And we start with, of course, last night's Champions Classic out in Indianapolis, Indiana at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. You had Michigan State and Kansas in the first slate of games, I should say, plural. And then you had the college football playoff rankings after that. It's always cool how they do that in between the two Champions Classic games. And then we saw Duke just absolutely give it to Kentucky after the college football playoff rankings and after the Kansas and Spartans game. To provide just a little bit more context on that Michigan State loss to the number one Jayhawks, we have Trevor, we got Adam, we got Denise live here in studio with me to help out with the headliners on this Wednesday. Trevor, provide some more details to that Michigan State loss.
Yeah, so obviously last night, 10th-ranked Spartans crept within 3 points on a Kyle Aaron's three-pointer with 34.6 seconds to play. But Kansas, number one Kansas, held on for a 92-87 victory last night. Kenny Goins and Cassius Winston both secured double-doubles, and Josh Langford led the team in scoring with 18 last night.
Yeah, who would have thought Kyle Arns would be the guy who would hit that big three to make it really interesting in the waning moments of that game?
Or Kenny Goins with a double 17-11?
Yeah, Kenny Goins as well. He was great. But I got a few points I want to make when it comes to the Spartans. I won't spoil it right now. But the fact that the Spartans made it a tight one in the waning moments, I think you can draw something from that, all right? Adam, the University of Michigan men's basketball team, a team that went all the way to the national championship game last year, also were the Big Ten tourney champions. They actually raised those two banners before last night's game against Norfolk State. What happened last night with John Beilein's team?
All right, it wasn't pretty, and plenty of questions remain, but the number 19 Michigan basketball team opened up its 2018-2019 season with a win. They were led in scoring by new starters John Teske, who had 13 points and 8 rebounds, and Ignis Brazdikas, who had 12 points.
Good job with that pronunciation, because I didn't know how to pronounce that.
Thank you. The Wolverines struggled offensively, making just 36.7% of their shots and scoring only 0.913 points per possession. But Michigan's defense showed it hasn't missed a beat from last season, as it held Norfolk State to nearly as many shots, 18 shots on 59 attempts, as turnovers, 13, en route to an easy 63-44 win.
Yeah, John Beilein's team really cruised in that game. Again, it's Norfolk State. So we'll see really what John Beilein's Wolverines are made of as the season pushes along. Also, the Michigan State women's basketball team were in action last night for its regular season opener at the Breslin Center. What happened there, Adam?
Yeah, I was actually in attendance for this game. Five Spartans scored in double figures as the Michigan State women's basketball team stormed past Bowling Green 99-69 in the season opener last night at the Breslin Center. Spartans were led by a double-double from senior center Jenna Allen, who scored a team-high 17 points to go along with a career-high 15 rebounds. Junior guard and East Lansing resident Taryn McCutcheon also had a double-double with 16 points and 12 assists, which tied her career high. Freshman guard Nia Clouden had 14 points. Sophomore forward Sydney Cooks had 13, and redshirt junior guard Shea Colley had 11. They also scored in double figures. Bowling Green head coach and Okemos native Robin Freilich was making her season debut for the Falcons. Bowling Green was led by a game-high 19 points from Andrea Cecil.
Yeah, and Nia Clouden is going to be a fun player to watch throughout the season. I don't know how many times I can say that. She is a joy to watch play that point guard position. All right, college football playoff revealings. Of course, as I mentioned, you know, that was revealed right in between the Michigan State, Kansas, and Duke and Kentucky men's basketball game. And Michigan football right now in the college football playoff. Trevor, tell us more.
All right. Following its 24-3 win at Maryland, Michigan State made its debut at number 18 in the second week of the college football playoff top 25 rankings released last night. The Spartans, who are 6-3 on the year, own a victory over number 20 Penn State and also defeated Utah State, who's 8-1. Only loss of the year came that August night against the Spartans, who's unranked in the college football playoff rankings, but is ranked 14th in the Associated Press poll.
That make any sense? No.
Not at all. Four of MSU's six wins are over teams with a winning record: Utah State, Penn State, Purdue, and Maryland. MSU hosts number 10 Ohio State on Saturday at noon here at Spartan Stadium. Games televised on Fox. And as you mentioned, Michigan, whose last two victories, including a 42-7 rout of Penn State last Saturday, impressed the College Football Playoff Committee enough to push the Wolverines into the number 4 spot.
We expected that. We saw that coming, right?
Yep.
Now, will they hold down that 4th spot throughout the year? That's a conversation we'll have later on this hour. Yeah, very. All right, Denise also in the his house. MSU volleyball in action tonight, hosting Ohio State, right?
Oh, yeah. So Michigan State will be hosting a pair of home games this week, starting with Ohio State tonight and Iowa on Saturday. You'll be able to watch all the action in Jenison Fieldhouse live on BTN to go. Despite a 7-match skid for MSU, the Spartans have shown a significant growth over the course of playing top 25 opponents. MSU recently fell to number 3 Minnesota last Saturday, but were the first team in 2018 to take the Gophers to 5 sets. It was 3-2, which I was very surprised by, because the last time we played Minnesota, it was 3-and-out shutout.
Yeah, Minnesota's really good.
MSU starting lineup features 1 senior, 2 sophomores, and 4 freshmen. In their first meeting of the season, the Spartans dropped to Ohio State in a tough 3-0 decision on the Buckeyes' home floor. But with the recent push against the Gophers, the story might be different tonight.
Should be a fun time at Jenison Fieldhouse tonight. Also, the Detroit Lions signed wide receiver Bruce Ellington and have waived Amir Abdullah, the team's leading rusher last season and that former second-round pick. Abdullah's role had diminished greatly this season after the signing of LeGarrette Blount and the draft selection of Kerryon Johnson in the second round. Now, with Blount, Johnson, and veteran Theo Riddick on the roster, Amir Abdullah was active for only 3 games this year, 2 of which came when Riddick was recovering from a knee injury. More on that later on this hour as well. And how about the Detroit Red Wings? Another win last night, Trevor.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, the Detroit Red Wings would have lost the game and afterwards lamented their inability to push back. Now they're finding ways to win. They have 4 victories in their past 5 outings, the latest a 3-2 shootout win last night against the Vancouver Canucks at Little Caesars Arena. Jimmy Howard was excellent, as were the special teams, and Dylan Larkin scored the only goal in the shootout.
Yeah, he did, and also the Detroit Pistons will be in action tonight on the road. The Pistons, sitting at 4-5 on the year, will take on the Orlando Magic at 7 p.m., at Amway Center. You can also listen to that matchup on 97.1 and check it out on television and Fox Sports Detroit. The Pistons have lost 5 straight. The Orlando Magic have won 2 in a row, winning at San Antonio and at home against Cleveland on an Evan Fournier buzzer beater. The Pistons are 1-3 on the road, and Orlando is 2-4 at home. And you guys know I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. Those watching on the live stream right now, I'm rocking my favorite hoodie, and I just saw breaking news on my phone. I'm just in a crappy mood right now because before the show started, I'm having this conversation with Adam and Trevor about, you know, my Dallas Cowboys and how much of a struggle bus it's been. And then as we're reading the headliners, I see breaking news on my phone. Sean Lee is out 4 to 6 weeks. And Dez Bryant has just signed a one-year deal with the New Orleans Saints. Clearly a Super Bowl contender this year. Trevor, please tell me more details about this, Trevor. I'm dying to know.
All right. The Dez Bryant free agency saga is now over. After a brief workout session with the Saints, they offered him a contract for 1 year, according to Adam Schefter. Bryant, who is 30, was released by the Cowboys in April after his on-field productivity slipped in 2016 and 2017. The once dominant physical wideout hasn't surpassed 900 yards since signing a lucrative extension in 2015, an extension fueled by remarkable numbers he racked up en route to being named a first-team All-Pro in 2014. Bryant will join an already stacked offense led by Drew Brees, Michael Thomas, and Alvin Kamara. Dez Bryant will make a return to AT&T Stadium on the 29th of this month when the Saints visit the Cowboys.
Yeah. Boos or cheers? That's going to be an interesting audio
booze
clip to play. You think so?
I think so.
Dez, especially, his production was horrible with us, you know, during these last 2 years especially. So, you know, and now we have Amari Cooper, who's fantastic. But there's so many things wrong with my Cowboys right now. I won't go on that rant. But, yeah, I'm going to be curious to see what happens and how the crowd reacts to Dez Bryant when he does, in fact, return to AT&T Stadium to play his old team. All right, thank you guys. Denise, Trevor, Adam, if you want to weigh in, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News and check out the live stream there. And you can tweet us, tweet the show at WKAR_sports, or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. We are now going to chat with Deshaun Tate, college basketball reporter, host, and producer for CBS Radio in Atlanta. Here we go.
That's the only negative about it, but who cares? You learn from it, and we will be better for playing this game on this stage in this tournament.
All right, and that's how we start this Wednesday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Of course, that raspy voice you just heard comes from Basketball Hall of Fame coach the great Tom Izzo. After his Michigan State men's basketball team came up just short against the number one team in all of the college hoops land, Kansas, 92-87, your final last night at the Champions Classic at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And, you know, when you really look at this game, first off, what you just heard from Tom Izzo was his response to a question. Because apparently Bill Self, after the game, said, you know, he doesn't like playing a game of this magnitude this early. And again, he was being a bit sarcastic. I mean, how can you not like being on that kind of a stage this early to start the college hoop year? But basically, the tone that I got from Bill Self when I heard his comment was that, you know, he's still figuring his team out. You know, his team is going to look totally different and evolve as the year goes along. So to sit here and make hard assumptions when looking at a game like this just isn't fair. You know, you got to let the college basketball year play out. But, you know, like Tom Izzo just said, I mean, you know, the benefits you get out of a game like this are huge. And Tom loves this kind of stuff. He loves playing Blue Bloods early in the year so that he can find out exactly what kind of a team he's working with early on in the season so that he can tweak certain things here and there and figure out how to get better. I love it. You can figure out, you know, what holes in the boat that you have right now and then plug them as you play game after game after game. So, you know, before I elaborate on a few more points here and give you my take, I want to get the take of a man who was right there courtside watching both games, Michigan State, Kansas, Duke, and Kentucky at the Champions Classic in Indianapolis, Indiana at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. You know him very well. He is a dear friend of Current Sports, college basketball reporter, host, and producer for CBS Radio in Atlanta. DeSean Tate joins us on line one. DeSean, how you doing, my man?
Martin, I'm freezing cold up here in Indianapolis, man. It's like that hawk dung came down on me, man. That brick cold, man. I'm back in the Midwest, man. I love it. It's nice and chilly, though, man. Just how I like it. Good football weather. Had a little bit of overcast since I've been here for the last 2 days. Not a cloud in the sky today, man. Champions Classic, college basketball is back. I'm loving each and every single last bit of it.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, it may have been cold outside, but it was pretty hot inside because this is always a cool event, DeSean. And I want to just start here. I mean, the atmosphere last night. I'm curious because when I looked up in the crowd, I mean, there was a lot of blue. Simple fact, because, you know, you got Duke, you got Kentucky and Kansas. They all have blue as one, at least, of their school colors. I'm curious, how much green was in the house at Bankers Life Fieldhouse?
Well, there wasn't a ton of green. For as many fans, and we all know Kentucky travels well, and that's not a knock on any of the other three schools, but if you wouldn't have known any better with all that blue, not even just the color itself, but how loud it was for Kentucky fans, of course, at the beginning of the game. Now we talk about, you know, after, you know, a good 10, 15 minutes or whatever, you know, things changed up quite a bit. It was quiet as a church mouse, but I will say enough to say that there wasn't a ton of green, but there was definitely more than enough Kentucky fans. And, I mean, all the tradition in the building. I mean, Michigan State's got a ton of tradition. I think a lot of Spartan fans are definitely frustrated and well-deserved, you know, that it should be that way because of, you know, all the success that Michigan State has had. So I think they've gotten a little bit spoiled, not making it to the second week of the NCAA tournament since they went to the Final Four in 15. But nevertheless, there was just, I mean, everything that Kansas brings and Kentucky and Duke, the hatred going all the way back to 91, Christian Laettner hitting the shot. I won't go as far as, you know, during some of the timeouts, you know, usually go to commercial on TV and have little kids dancing on the camera. And, of course, you know, Kentucky fan, you know, when they put a Kentucky fan, a little kid on there, you know, on the big screen, all the fans are there cheering. And then they put a Duke kid on the TV screen, and they're booing little kids out. They're booing little kids. I couldn't believe that. But that just and as sad as that is to say, it just goes to show how deep the rich tradition is and the rivalry between Duke and Kentucky. It was great.
It does not matter to Sean. The rivalry is real. And, you know, if the kid is rocking a team that the opposition does not like, I don't care how cute and cuddly that kid may be, that kid is getting some booze, all right? That's how it goes.
Right.
As far as any big names in the building, I did see at ESPN they interviewed Joel Embiid, who was sitting there courtside. I believe his 76ers take on the Indiana Pacers tonight. And, of course, Joel Embiid did attend Kansas for 1 year. Other than Embiid, any big names or celebrities that you saw in the house? Other than yourself, of course, Deshaun.
Right. Well, I don't know if I go that far. We didn't have Al Martin, so it wasn't too packed of a house. But Steve Smith was there. Steve Smith was around. He definitely spoke to the team a little bit halftime and in the pregame speech a little bit, kind of preparing the guys. And I know that Jimmy Butler did Tyus Jones a nice favor by allowing him to get some personal use of his private jet to make sure he can go see his brother debut, Trey Jones, who played really well last night. And he's going to be the guy. Everybody's going to talk about the other three freshmen, and rightfully so, with 28 points from Zion and, you know, 22 points from Cam Reddish. And then, of course, everybody knows what the 33 from Barrett. But nobody's going to give credit when they see Trey Jones, his box score. You see 6 points and 7 assists. But the way that he controlled the tempo, he's a different kind of a player. He's very similar to Tyus Jones. Looks exactly like him, but the way he controlled the tempo, controlled the offense, zero turnovers. He just never looked out of sync. These guys look like and playing like they're much older than what they are, but the unfortunate part about the, you know, because of the chemistry, but the unfortunate part about that is everybody going to talk about how good Duke looked, and they looked really good, but this is a sad day in Kentucky. You better believe that.
And we'll get to that in just a moment. I want to tackle what you saw from the Spartans last night, though, Deshaun. Is the bigger takeaway that the Spartans did make it a game and fought back late, or that Michigan State does have some offensive challenges? If they can't score in transition or execute a play offensively, I mean, do they have many guys that can create their own shot? What is the bigger takeaway, that they fought back or that they do have some offensive woes?
I think it's a combination of both, and I don't think we should read into it too much just because of the simple fact that it is the very first game of the season. So Kentucky, or none of the teams except for Duke, but obviously Kansas wasn't as sharp in the second half as they could have been. And I think we're going to see certain games where Michigan State is going to get down late in the first half, going to have to fight back in the second half. I was impressed by what I've seen out of Kyle Arens, because I've never seen him play that well before, let alone get up off the pine. But outside of that, you know, one of the reasons for that is Joshua Langford has to be better in the first half. It kind of seems like he is mentally out of the game sometimes when his first couple shots are not falling. But he looked a little different in the second half. Granted, you know, they looked much better as a team and as a unit. I was impressed by Kenny Goins and what he was able to do. And then the thin front court for Michigan State. I mean, that's a heavy load, not just for, you know, for Udoka Azubuike, but also David McCormick, who's darn near 7 foot himself, a freshman out of Oak Hill, who's really talented as well. But the perimeter defense for Michigan State has to get better, and I think that starts with the guy that's running point, Cassius Winston. He's not a super athletic guy, but he definitely has to get better at his lateral movement and his defense. And I was telling your producer this, you know, the same way that we saw Brian Lewerke get challenged by Lombardi, by Rocky, I think that Cassius Winston needs to probably be under some of that little bit of pressure himself. I'm not sure that Foster Lawyer is the guy, but I think he needs to be put under a little bit of that pressure to play better, if not nothing else, on the defensive end of the ball.
Yeah, because, I mean, and that's been a challenge that Cassius has had throughout his, you know, 3-year career here at Michigan State. And we saw the Jayhawks and that freshman guard tandem of Quentin Grimes and Devon Dotson, that really gave Michigan State trouble last night. But Deshaun, you know, who other than the juniors, you know, in Nick Ward and Cassius Winston and Joshua Langford, other than those juniors and the starters for this team, combined with the two other starters, you know, and Kenny Goins as well, and is included in that bunch, and he had a great game last night. Who will be big for Michigan State this season other than the starters and those three juniors?
Definitely, I would definitely have to say I definitely have to say Aaron Henry. I mean, he's as good as advertised. I know I wasn't exactly sure after looking at those three guys. I only a few guys have seen them in the Moneyball League. And, of course, you can't take that with very much, stock or whatever. But I like the way that he got a shot blocked against, Big Doak Azubuki up in the middle. But, at the end of the day, he had the heart to go up and do it. He went out there and tried to put his best foot forward. He played good defense. He's athletic. We know his jumping ability, but he's a fearless basketball player, and I like that about him. I think it's a little unfortunate for Michigan State that they got just kind of too many nice guys on this team and guys that don't necessarily want to pull the trigger. We've seen that even a couple times with Matt McQuaid, where he's got to be ready to catch and fire. He can't afford any hesitation. But I definitely do like what I saw out of Aaron Henry. You maybe didn't see a lot on the stat sheet or whatnot, but you can definitely see exactly why. Just little bits and pieces, little flashes as to why Tom Izzo likes him so much. I think he's going to be a really good piece for them going forward.
Yeah, and you saw Aaron a few times last night. He is not afraid to shoot the basketball. And also, I saw Aaron Henry a few times last night. He got in the face of Josh Langford. He got in the face of Cassius Winston. I mean, the kid seems like a leader, and he's not afraid, even though he's young and he's a freshman on this squad. He's not afraid to speak up. Deshaun, what is the biggest make or break area for the Spartans?
I think that it'll have to start where all the Tom Izzo led teams that were successful started. That's with being, just an absolute pest, a pest on the defensive end of the ball. And on top of that, getting back to who they were from a rebounding standpoint, I know that they did very well in that department, in that area last year. As number one, I think it was offensive rebounding in the conference, and number two defensive. But, you're missing a Jaren Jackson in certain cases, where Miles Bridges was a very good offensive rebounder as well, putback dunks and what have you. With all of that athleticism and sometimes playing the four position, they're missing those two guys, and I think that you can kind of tell that. So they got to get back into being the Tom Izzo-led team that was number one in the country in rebounding, the number one free-throw shooting team in the country for a really long time. Last night they missed 12 of those. That's not any good. And probably the biggest thing, Al, is that they've got to keep from turning the ball over. I mean, it's been way too many consecutive years in a row after the Drew Neitzel era that we've seen the assist-to-turnover ratio a little bit, it's just not like very much Tom Izzo-led type of teams, and they've got to keep from cutting down. 18 turnovers is unfortunately, is just not going to cut it. Even Tom Izzo, he's got to be better himself down the stretch where I know he really wanted to, kind of put Udoka Azubuki on the free throw line, and unfortunately didn't have a chance to do that. So, the time was running down a little bit too far, and we're seeing uncharacteristic things, not even just last year, but picking right back up this year where we last left off last year in the Syracuse game, where it's just not really good play calling from his side. And if not nothing else, you go out there, you make a quick foul on a point guard. Sure, you don't want to put a point guard on the line because they typically shoot, better from the charity stripe than anybody else on the team, in which they should, but it's still your fouling freshman in very tight time of the game and putting them on the free throw line where the lights are shining the brightest. And that's just something that you have to do. He didn't do that. And it's all across the board, from the coaching to, the starters, the juniors, all across the board. I think that they're all at fault. I think they can be better and that they will be better.
Yeah, and again, it's only, the very first game of the year, and you only lose by 5 points against number one Kansas. And you mentioned those turnovers, Deshaun, five from Nick Ward, five from Cassius Winston, the player who has been fantastic, throughout his tenure here at Michigan State when it comes to assist-to-turnover ratio, and he had five of them. And that was a problem in the Gonzaga scrimmage as well. I mean, that was noted, Cassius Winston turning the basketball over. That can't happen. And also the missed free throws. I mean, Michigan State at the free throw line, 23 of 35. And Kansas as well. I mean, Kansas was just, 20 of 33 from the line. They shot actually worse from the free throw line than Michigan State did last night. So I say all that to say this, Deshaun. I mean, first game of the year, you're not going to play a team with the kind of talent like Kansas every single night. But, with the fact that Michigan State made it this close, what are the realistic expectations for the Spartans team? Now, I know that's a loaded question because it is only game one of many, but what can you look into your crystal ball and see for the Spartans?
Well, the fact that they have one of the best coaches in the country, regardless how you look at it, whether you consider him a top three, top five, top 10, whatever, he still has that HOF abbreviation next to his name. He's a Hall of Famer, and I think that that's something that they've got good going for themselves, and they've got a really good balanced team, and that they're going to come away with some wins just because of the fact that they are very experienced and very good from the guard position, and Nick Ward coming back and shedding weight. And I think all those things will play into benefits for Michigan State. But then you got certain teams even within the conference as we get a little bit closer after, you know, whether it be Florida or Louisville or whomever, whatever, in the ACC Big Ten Challenge, where they're going to have to play better teams because they're going to be very physical teams, something that Tom Izzo-led teams typically hang their hats on, being defensive staples and anchors. And they've kind of gotten away from that a little bit. Wisconsin's not going to be as bad as they were last year. That's not going to happen. Minnesota's not going to be as bad as they were last year. That's just not going to happen. Michigan is still right there and going to be very, very good and going to feel disrespected because I still think a lot of people saying, well, we're not even considered to be one of the top three, you know, teams in our conference or what have you. But Michigan State's right there at the top and getting all this praise, and they're still playing with a chip on their shoulder. So I think that realistically, as far as expectations, Michigan State will be fine in the end, but they can't play like they'll be fine in the end. They have to just treat it almost as if that, you know, that they've got a ton to prove and just kind of go out there and put their best foot forward. I think they'll be fine in the end. They've got some things to work on, which I'm sure every single team around Division I college basketball will say the same thing right now.
Yeah, without a doubt, and I heard your question that you asked Tom Izzo last night. You know, how would you grade the MSU basketball performance? And Tom responded he would give MSU a D plus in the first half and a B minus in the second half. Real quick, Deshaun, I do want to go back to Duke because it's hard not to look at how they absolutely manhandled John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats last night and sit there and say to yourself, man, I don't know if that's not the best team in the nation right now. Sure, Kansas does have that numero uno next to its name right now, but you know, you look at, and as you mentioned, Zion Williamson, who had 28 points, Cam Reddish, 22, RJ Barrett, who I think is going to be the number one overall pick in next summer's NBA draft with 33. He's very impressive. Is Duke the real number one?
Well, that's hard to say. They certainly play like they're without question number one team in the country. I think if Kansas was holding on to that lead against Michigan State by, you know, that good 15-point stretch that Michigan State couldn't overcome yesterday, we might be having a little bit more different conversation in terms of more confident that Kansas is hands down the number one team in the country. But when you watch their performance and then Duke come out and do what they did, and not against, you know, a bum team. I mean, yeah, it's still Kentucky, and they're doing it with freshmen the same way that Kentucky's doing it. They got the best coach in the country. So I think that it is debatable. I don't think we could just take too much into this and say, oh, well, Duke's the number one team. Or we could just say, well, Kansas is the number one team. I mean, what makes you the number one team? It looked like that is Duke, but because the rankings don't really matter. But they played like the number one team in the country last night, and that being the Duke Blue Devils. And here's just a little nugget for you, Al. Check this out. If Duke wins this the national championship this year, which I still believe is national championship or bust, they can't afford to go to the national championship game and lose at the buzzer by one. It's championship or bust, especially coming off of the team that they had last year. Mm-hmm. They will have six national championships if they win it this year. Indianapolis is a great place that Duke plays. Two places in the country that they typically don't lose. That's New York and Indianapolis. In 91 with Leitner, they won it in Indianapolis, the same thing as they did in 2010 and the same thing as they did in 2015. That's three of their six. Now, the other four and five that they won was in 92 in Minneapolis, as well as 2001, another Final Four that Michigan State was in when Duke beat Arizona, which was also in Minneapolis. The national championship this year will be played, Al Martin, in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Talk about looking in your crystal ball, right?
a little bit of taste take right there, a little bit of taste take. Wishful thinking for the Blue Devil fans, but they looking like it, Al, and I'm not sure who the number one is. We won't know until the very end.
Yeah.
But there's going to become a learning curve for a lot of these freshmen, as every single freshman does. And when they have to go in those road games to Virginia and Syracuse and see the zone, see something they've never seen, these guys are so young, I think that'll, you know, how they'll overcome some of those battles. Typically, Boston College, where you can't overlook certain teams, at Florida State, games that are letdown games that you can't afford to happen, if they come off some of those losses, how will they bounce back? I think that's where you will kind of tell, have a little bit better feel.
All right, that's Tate's take. Deshaun Tate of CBS Radio in Atlanta. Deshaun, safe travels back to the ATL. Outstanding job here on Today's Current Sports, my man.
Hey, thank you so much, man. I'm back on 65 South, man. It's too cold out.
Turn up the heat, brother. All right? You certainly did here on Current Sports. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
The one, the only Deshaun Tate. He brings it, man. All right, I want to hit our first break. When we come back, I'll have some more thoughts concerning the Michigan State men's basketball loss to Kansas last night. I want to elaborate on a few points that Tom Izzo made during his post-game presser. Also, you'll get to hear from Coach Mark D'Antonio during his weekly press conference as the Michigan State football team gets ready to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes this weekend. That and more, you are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We just finished chatting with Deshaun Tate, college basketball expert for CBS Radio in Atlanta. He was at the Champions Classic in Indiana last night. You heard his thoughts, and you got his take, Tate's take, on the Michigan State men's basketball team this season. A few other points I want to elaborate on, and specifically when it comes to what Tom Izzo, head coach of the Spartans, had to say after that loss for Michigan State. And he makes some very good points here. You know, he talked about the turnovers for touchdowns. There were way too many turnovers for Michigan State last night. Again, 18 to be exact. 5 from Cassius Winston, 5 coming from big man Nick Ward. Kansas getting every loose rebound. They got the 50-50 balls last night. Kansas had a total of 42 rebounds. Michigan State, though, not far behind with 40 there. So relatively close there. And, you know, you talk about Udoka Azubuike, who is the big man for the Kansas Jayhawks last night. It really surprised me that a man of his size only got 3 total rebounds last night. Dedrick Lawson led the team in rebounding last night for Kansas. He snagged in 11 boards. So there you have that. That was a bit surprising looking at that stat. Also, Izzo stressed the importance of making free throws. Michigan State did not shoot well at the charity stripe. Izzo was not happy with the Nick Ward layup that he thought was a foul, in which Nick Ward slipped and fell right on his back. Hopefully that's not a lingering issue as Michigan State moves forward and will play this this Sunday, actually. He said, quote, when it comes to that stretch there and that Nick Ward layup, quote, we aren't good enough against them to have an 8-point swing. And if you remember on that missed layup, Kansas goes down on the other end of the floor and nails a 3-pointer. And again, yeah, I agree with Tom here as well. I mean, you let Udoka Azubuike get way too deep in the paint. I mean, when he gets that deep and gets that kind of position against undersized big men like Nick Ward, like, as we saw at times, Kyle Arnes, barbecue chicken, as the great Shaquille O'Neal would say. You know, also Xavier Tillman. I mean, he got supreme position far too often down in the paint, and Azubuike ate off of that. And also, the juniors in the first half were not great shooting the basketball. 2 of 13
in the first half for Nick Ward, Cassius Winston, and Josh Langford. That's key as well. And now I hear all this talk. You know, a lot of people, you know, the sexy take right now when it comes to Michigan State's offense is that Joshua Langford has to play well if Michigan State is going to win a lot of basketball games this year. I hear that. And, you know, I agree to a certain standpoint. You know, Izzo, when it comes to Langford, you know, he had to wake Josh Langford up at halftime, and he got in his grill. You know, Izzo was asked after the game, you know, I know you had a conversation with Josh Langford, and Izzo laughed and said, you call it a conversation. And it was more like a reaming. He chewed into Josh Langford and woke Josh up in the second half. Quote, he's got to play better. When they told me he was the leading scorer, I was shocked. Direct quote coming from Tom Izzo. Also, Izzo went on to say, quote, thought Josh got frustrated early. When he gets frustrated early, that affects his game. Well, that reminds me a bit of a player by the name of Bryn Forbes from Michigan State. That's how Bryn was. You know, if Bryn came out and missed his first few shots, he would let it get to him, and he just wasn't the same guy as the game went along. Josh has to be aggressive. But I stand by my statement in saying this team is only going to go as far as Cassius Winston takes them. All right, Cassius was very hesitant to shoot the basketball early on, and that really hurt Michigan State. And, you know, he began to get more aggressive as the game went along. And Cassius is a guy I'm starting to see. He can create his own shot a little bit here. And that's one thing that Michigan State is going to struggle with. They don't have a lot of guys that can say, give me the basketball. I am going to create and make something happen here. Cassius is one of those guys. I think Nick can be one of those guys as well. And if Josh chooses to, he can also be one of those guys. But other than that, I don't know. I don't know who else you can go to. Michigan State is going to rely like it always has. They're going to rely on that transition game. And if that gets stymied by the opposition, working on those half-court sets, coming off of curls, down screens, and trying to free up jump shots. But if those two things stall, Michigan State does not have a lot on this team, talent-wise. Talent that basically can create his own shot and put the ball in the bucket. They had that with two guys who are now NBA draft lottery picks flourishing at the next level. And by the way, did you see what Miles Bridges did last night? I mean, that dunk that he had for the Charlotte Hornets last night. Oh, my goodness. One of the best dunks I've seen in the NBA in a while. But, you know, that's the kind of player that Miles Bridges was, and that's the kind of player that Jaren Jackson Jr. is now. So we'll see what happens here. I'm curious to get your thoughts. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Michigan State now has played the number one and the number three, team in the nation. You know, two top programs here in Gonzaga and Kansas. What are your thoughts on Michigan State hoops? I want to hear from you all. Right now, though, I do want to play a bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say. Mark D'Antonio, of course, head coach of the Michigan State football team, as he held his weekly press conference yesterday. Michigan State prepares for the Ohio State Buckeyes this weekend. And as you heard in our quick hit headliners, Trevor told you all, Michigan State football sits at 18th in the college football playoff rankings. The chances of Michigan State knocking off Ohio State, I do believe there is a chance here, because I'm not impressed with that Ohio State defense. The quarterback conversation, though, Mark D'Antonio doubled down on Brian Lewerke still being the starting quarterback for the Spartans. That and more. Here is a bit of what Mark D'Antonio had to say.
Well, we're going to look at our quarterbacks throughout the week, as we always do, see how everybody's working and playing and et cetera, make decisions at game time. Brian's our starting quarterback. You can go with that. That's the foundation that he's built here. I didn't see any velocity issues relative to his arm strength. I think you guys push and point towards trying to get answers and push people towards those things. If he was hurt, he would not be playing. You know, is he 100%? Nobody's ever 100% 10 games into the season. But if he could not play, he would not play. We were a 30-mile-an-hour wind down there in Maryland. You know, the other guy wasn't throwing very well either. I'm talking about the opposing team. So a lot of things go into that, but I think he has a foundation. As I said after the football game, though, not afraid to use Rocky. I think he made a big statement against Purdue in that football game, and I look at him as a ace reliever. And if we need to go to him, if we're not having success, then we will go to him.
Mark, obviously last year, 335, I think it was, on the ground. How much of that do you guys, because there's a lot of, you know, same two backs are back, and you got a lot of your same defensive personnel. Do you really go back to that tape a lot from last year, or do you look more at what they're doing this year? And how much does that, what happened last year?
You look at everything. You look at the six-game study. You know, we got a six-game study. Looking back to 2012, different things. So, and I'm sure that they do the same. You know, we also look at what Indiana did against us, you know, because of Kevin Wilson being there. You know, you try and look at every imaginable thing. They do the same. I think they do a good job of coaching. They did some things last year that put us in conflict, I think. So, you know, run-pass conflicts and things of that nature. And then they broke tackles. Two good running backs, as I said earlier. And, you know, they had their way last year. So we need to play one play at a time and get ourselves, you know, focused and prepared, but not too over-energetic, and play this game accordingly.
With the same, a lot of your same personnel, how much motivation is there for those guys to make up for what, you know, what transpired last year?
You know, I don't know. I think every game is really, like, as I said earlier a couple weeks back, every game is sort of a new season. And you can look at every single game and build on it from the past and look to the future. But I expect our players to get ready every single game, regardless of who we play. I mean, it's too difficult in this league not to be prepared mentally and emotionally. So, you know, how high can you get? You know, I want our guys at peak performance game time. You know, whatever that is, their peak performance, whoever that is. Whether it's a quarterback, defensive back, a backup, whatever it is, I want them to be at their peak performance.
Mark, right here. Matt Allen not on the depth chart for the second straight week. Do you expect him back this season?
Yeah, he'll be back this season, okay. And we'll see whether he's on. We'll see how it goes this week, sort of day to day.
And Josh Butler is a guy we haven't seen in a while. And a while back, you had said he was getting close. Did he have a setback along the way, or just?
You know, I really don't want to talk too much about injuries, other than to say they're day to day.
Okay. And then Josiah, how did? When you see him Sunday or Monday after playing a lot, after not playing, obviously, good. All this season,
he'll be starting. He'll be starting at quarter.
His body held up and everything. He felt pretty good about being able to play that amount of plays.
I thought he played well, yeah.
Thank you.
When you get to six victories and the bowl game is secured, it's kind of a two-part question mark. It seems like in this day and age that more programs might benefit from, given the fact everybody's trying to win, make that bowl eligibility really a very significant goal and objective. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it can be a little bit elitist on the part maybe of critics who sometimes say that team isn't worth going to a bowl, that record isn't worthy of going to a postseason game. You, from a coaching standpoint, I believe see bowl games as being not only perhaps a testament to the program, but as an opportunity for kids who maybe have not traveled, who have not had their horizons significantly expanded. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it seems like it gets glossed over and dismissed too much.
Yeah, you know, I think bowl games, that's the first hurdle that you try and clear. Regardless of what program you're at, where you're at, you know, I guess there's a lot of givens that, hey, we're going to get to that. But, you know, still when you get to the sixth win, there's a lot of meaning in that. It means that that you're going somewhere. And I do think that it's an opportunity for your young people to go and experience life in a different area a little bit. It's a reward for them. It's a reward for our staff as well. And it's a point of where you can jump to the next thing. You get an extra month of practice, basically. I don't know how much you use to getting better or how much you use just to try and get ready for your opponent. I'm not sure on that, really, sometimes, just depending on the bowl game and the time frame. But I think it's a springboard to greater things. Even this year, you know, winning six, now can we win seven? And then can you win eight? Then can you win nine? You know, what is the, you know, what's the pattern there? What can you do with what you've got? So, and really in November, we have always tried to work towards the championship. That's our goal. But if that goal doesn't happen, then you're going to point towards another goal, and you know, with every win, you go up a, I think you go up a notch in terms of where you're playing and the the experience that you're probably going to have at that bowl place and who you're going to play against. And at the end of the day, you want to represent Michigan State.
Mark, with JT, it seemed like he was there forever. Obviously, you know, you guys. Haskins is a lot different. He's not as mobile. How much does his, not his inability to run, but the fact he doesn't do it as much, change what they do offensively and how maybe you prepare defensively?
Well, I think they want to be balanced, even though they tilt towards passing until this last game, for at times. But I think they do want to be balanced. They have good running backs, and I think that's what they'll try and do. A lot of these things gets tilted because of, you know, down and distances. You know, what down and distance are you in relative to what you're going to do? So that can be a little bit misleading, but I do think they want to be balanced. I think he's a very good quarterback. He's got a great arm. He's got great wide receivers to go to. They have a great scheme, and he's been extremely productive. If you look at the productivity of their offense right now, you know, it's a big task. It's a big challenge, you know, so we're getting ready for it.
All right, Mark D'Antonio. His weekly press conference at Spartan Stadium. You heard his comments, and again, you heard him double down on the whole quarterback situation for Michigan State as Brian Lewerke will be the starter. You know, and you know, is he 100%? Mark D'Antonio gave the very politically correct answer of nobody is 100% at this point of the season. So, you know, you heard my thoughts earlier this week. I think that the leash should be very, very tight if Brian Lewerke is not getting the job done early for the Spartans. And if it looks like he's throwing lame ducks like he has been in these last few weeks, you got to pull him. Also, you know, Matt Allen, you will see him later on this year. And also the possibility of L.J. Scott redshirting. Something to think about. I'll address that on tomorrow's Current Sports, okay? I do want to pass along some breaking news to you all. Former Michigan State football player Austin Robertson has pleaded guilty to raping a woman last year during an off-campus incident. Robertson pleaded guilty to one count of assault with intent to commit criminal sexual penetration in Ingham County Circuit Court today, telling a judge he did assault a fellow MSU student in her apartment last year. Robertson could now face up to 43 months in prison when he goes before Judge Clinton Kennedy III for sentencing on December 4th. He would also now have to register as a sex offender. He was charged with sexually assaulting a 20-year-old woman in her Meridian Township apartment in April of 2017. The woman testified that Robertson walked up to her second-floor apartment, then followed her into her bedroom and forced himself on her. The woman told her boyfriend about the incident. The boyfriend, who was a teammate of Robertson's, then notified his coach, who then reported it to police. More on that on tomorrow's Current Sports as well. Until then, we are on a 23-hour break. Be easy, people.